Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Welcome to the last, as it happens, recording of The Good Listening To Show and podcast for 2023, please. Hurrah! And delighted to welcome the Children's Laureate of Wales, 21 to 23. So one of the questions I'll obviously be asking you is whether your tenure's about to come to an end. We'll come on to that. But this is Connor Allen, who I got in touch with because I was walking past Radio 4 in the kitchen, if you know what I mean by that. And I heard a poem called Knock Knock, which stopped me in my tracks. Wow. And I immediately went to my computer and got in touch with Connor and said, would you like to be on the show? And he said, yes, within about 24 hours. Knock Knock stopped me in my tracks. It's a beautiful poem, a brilliant poem. Also, it resonated because I've written my own short comic film, dark comic short, called Knock Knock. So there were two things that got hold of me. It was that and that. And then that's why I then loved your poem, which I think you've been kind enough to say you don't mind sharing with us as one of the things that we'll talk about.
Yeah, by all means, 100%.
So you're very welcome, Connor. So yes, do you want to tell us the story behind the story, first of all, of being the Welsh Children's Laureate 2021 to 2023?
Yeah, so to answer your question, I'm now the former Children's Laureate. My tenure has come to an end. Okay. So I finished in September. 2-year stint, but it originally started way back. How far did we go? I gave a talk at my old high school to the sixth form leaver ceremony. I got invited back, and I basically just gave a speech pretty much directly to the young people, and talked about my journey and second chances and my kind of, I guess, my troubled past and where I'm at like then. And all the teachers and parents came up to me afterwards and really thanked me. And they were like, honestly, you were so honest and thank you so much. And I was like, wow, okay. And someone said, because obviously I was, I had trouble with like the police and the law. They were like, you should go into prison and talk to young offenders. And I was like, nah, I'm good. But one of the teachers knew someone from Literature Wales, which is an organization in Wales who obviously deal with literature, hence the name. And they got in contact, and I had a meeting with a lovely, amazing woman called Louise. And we had a meeting. I told her my story. And within, I'd say, 3 weeks, she messaged me and was like, okay, so I've got you some funding. So we're going to go into Pat Prison and we're going to do some creative writing workshops. And I was like, wow. And off the back of doing that project for 6 weeks and working with those young people, I wrote a blog because I got so overwhelmed and I cried on my fifth day. And we created like just authentic, real stories from them, you know, and it was really kind of powerful. And it was just amazing that give them a creative outlet. So I was on Literature Wales radar after that. And then obviously the post for Children's Laureate came up. So they just kind of sent me a message and was like, we think you should apply for this or send an application through. And at the time I was like, I don't write poetry, barely anyway. And I definitely don't write poetry for children. So I'm good. And I spoke to my mum, good old mother, and she just said, like, well, what have you got to lose? So, you know, send your stuff in. Well, they might say no, they might say yes. So I was like, okay. So, you know, I wrote my application and I attached, like, I think it was like 3 poems that I wrote. I got an interview, got through, got a phone call 2 weeks later, and they wanted to offer me the role. And at the time, I guess I didn't understand like what a children's laureate was. Didn't know what a laureate was. You know, I'm from a council estate in Newport. So for us, you know, laureates and titles, and we were like, what? So I didn't really know what that was. And it was only until my Jamaican gran said, Connor, do you know Maya Angelou was a laureate? And I was like, yeah, all right, Nan. So I Googled it, and she was, and I was like, Oh, okay. Nowadays, like, wow, this is quite a big deal. And then obviously I looked at like the lineage of laureates from history, and I was like,
Yes.
wow, it's a true honor. So that, in a nutshell, that's how I came to be the Children's Laureate of Wales.
What I love about that is the slight comic lens line of you're a poet and you didn't even know it. And how wonderful that, you know, what's meant for you won't pass you by, despite your best efforts. Also, I love the fact that one of your poetry books is called Dominoes. So there's been a real domino principle of you having an experience, a door opens, one thing leads to another. And then how extraordinary
Yeah.
you end up unknowing to you end up in prison, really inspiring people. Then you're inspiring young people. Then, you know, you inspired me through your poem, Knock Knock. So isn't that
Wow.
extraordinary that
No.
it's an extraordinary thing?
I really find that, like, the more I talk and the more I do events and public speaking, the more I'm finding that, like, my story and my message of hope and inspiration, it isn't just for young people. There's like,
Yes.
I was at a parents' evening for a school, a local school in Newport, and I gave a speech there, and a father who was 56 came over, and he was like, "Son, just want to say well done, and you've inspired me, and I'm 56, but I'm going to go to work tomorrow more inspired because of you, so thank you." And I was just like, "Wow, okay, look,
Yes.
that I find crazy, you know, because I'm like, what, like, yeah."
The station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, aunt and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And your poetry, Dominoes, I've really enjoyed researching you, by the way. Dominoes, this is poetry as open heart surgery, raw, revealing, exposing, and utterly true. Somebody, John
Wow.
Gower, said about
John
you.
Gower said, yeah.
And also, what's really wonderful about you, too, is that, and so I'm just blowing some happy smoke at you, is the
No,
idea that
please.
you're searingly honest and it's poignant, and the fact that you've had a second chance. I'm not nudging you as to what I'd like you to talk about. You could talk about whatever you like, but I love the fact that you know you've come back from a you had a 3-year suspended jail sentence, and it's just been a really extraordinary story, which is why it doesn't surprise me that you've done great work in going back to inspire others, to encourage them to take a different and a new path based on possibilities and future potential. And that's what I took from Knock Knock as well, the idea of, you know, the gateway towards the future, as opposed to taking you down, you know, the shame of memory lane is one of the things that I know.
Even when I wrote that, so that originally, that Knock Knock got commissioned as my first poem as laureate, but that got commissioned as like this festival for hope. And I was like, and I was trying to like, how to talk about hope? Like, but you know, and then I thought, okay. And what I really found from working with young people, like children are not stupid. So actually, and that was a me flaw. Like I thought I had to really kind of lessen down poetry to make it accessible for young people and for children. And it's like, no. And I think that's one thing I really did learn during my tenure was like, actually, no, kids are not stupid, because the beautiful thing about children, if they don't understand something, they'll ask. They'll just be like, what do you mean? What's that mean? Whereas the older we get, the more embarrassed we get, the more we start there to then think, oh, actually, do you know what? I ain't going to ask that because I'll look like the stupid one. So I'll Google it later. You know, whereas me, I've been in meetings with like artistic directors. I'd be like, what's that word mean? You know? And I'm 31 years old. I'm like, I don't care. I'm like, mate, you, every day's a school day. So you can teach me, you know? I'm like, well, tell me. Like, what does that mean? So when I came to do Knock Knock, that's why really I was like, let me be like, yeah, you know, like I have got history of shame when I travel down memory lane, but actually it's okay, because I guarantee you, you're going to grow up and you're going to make mistakes, because we're human. So it doesn't matter if you're 8 years old or if you're 14 years old, you know, actually, yes. Like I guarantee you, especially like post COVID and people being alone, not seeing their friends and losing family members, you know, the harsh reality is we're going to have painful memories. So yes. Actually, it's like we could either run from those, which I've spent a lot of my life doing, or we can just like confront them head on and be like, well, do you know what? They're going to play a part in making the person that I'm going to become. So yes. I was really hesitant about putting something like that, which I like, you know, could be considered quite dark in a poem about hope. But I thought, well, actually, that's the whole point of hope, is no matter how dark it does get, there's always a light. There's always hope. You know, if they go low, we go high. So I'm always like, yeah, let's always, if we have anything in this world, we have hope.
Yes. A previous guest, by the way, someone called David Hyatt, who does the Do lectures. He hooked me because of an icon of a yellow front, just a yellow door in the middle of a clearing in a field, which is such a random thing, but it's brilliant because on the door, it's about a gateway to a new me. So it's about threshold crossing, which again was resonant. That's one of the other reasons that I was so struck with Knock Knock. I keep teasing our audience about Knock Knock. I want to put your poetry book on a metaphorical plinth within the clearing coming up. So I promise that we'll feature the poem if you'd be kind enough to share that.
100%, I'd love to.
So welcome. It's my great privilege and pleasure. I nearly said pleasure and privilege, and it came out as privilege, which didn't make sense.
That's a new word right there. You just created a new word.
And yes, it's my great pleasure to curate you through this journey. There's going to be a clearing, a tree, a lovely juicy storytelling exercise called 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. There'll be some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a golden baton, and a cake.
Perfect.
So it's all to play for. So, Conor Allen, let's get you on the open road. Where is a clearing for you? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational, and able to think?
Can I cheat and have two? So I do a lot. I do a lot of thinking when I'm in the car, which I'm driving, and it sounds, yeah, because then I can't distract myself. So I'm just there. So a lot of my thoughts kind of come when I'm driving, and I'll put on an album or an audio book, and you know, yeah. So there's that. Or
accessing your inner Suggs there. I like driving in my car. A bit of madness there for you. So
what else would you be driving in, Connor? You know, yeah, I get it. and then I think my next kind of place of tranquility would be my nan passed away last year. So just going to her grave. And just sitting, I'll just put a coat down and I'll just sit next to my nan. And that's, like, I guess, like my place where I can go to with just solitude, you know?
Yes. I'm sorry to hear that she passed last year. Presumably not COVID related in this instance.
No.
Yes. So I'm going to arrive with a tree at your clearing, if I may. And no one's ever answered, actually, in the 200 episodes I've done, no one's ever said at a graveside. So thank you for that. If I may, then, could I choose that one of the two?
Done.
Thank you. So I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm going to arrive, if I may, with a tree, a bit Waiting for Godot-esque. I know you've trained as an actor, by the way, as well.
But yeah, yeah.
A bit of Beckett existentially arriving with a tree within your clearing.
Bam.
And I'm going to shake it to see which storytelling apples fall out. How do you like these apples? And this is where you've been kind enough to respond to a lovely storytelling construct called 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, where you've had 5 minutes to have thought about four things that have shaped you, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention. That'll be where the squirrels come in, borrow from the film Up. And then a quirky, nice, or unusual fact about you. Connor Allen, Children's Laureate, just stepped down of Wales 2021 to 23. So over to you to interpret the canopy shaking as you see fit.
Oh, wow. Jeez. That's it.
Right, it's not a memory exercise, by the way. I'll curate you through it. So if you want to start with four things that have shaped you.
Four things that have shaped me. So I think my first would be my suspended sentence, I guess, would be top of the list, I think. And that back in 07. That would be top of the list, I think. So what I'm going to combine that into one. So like my suspended sentence and then the what I did to my mum, which caused that, I think would be top of the list, because I think that was like that one domino that really did spiral off. And I think my mum, like I can look back now, I'll give context for that. So one night when I was 16, I got into an argument with my mum, and the argument turned physical, and I attacked my mum, and I fled, and then I got arrested, and because she phoned the police, and I got arrested and went to court, and I had a 3-year suspended sentence for 2 counts of assault and battery and 1 count of GBH. So that I think would be probably the biggest apple to fall from that tree in terms of the things that have shaped me. Because I think I always look back, and like I said, I've wrote blogs about it. When I went into the prison, like I've made a theatre show, The Making of a Monster, radio play, all off that event. Not so much that event, but it was linked into a whole story around. So growing up, by the way, how long have I got for these apples? Because I realize I could probably talk about this apple for a while.
No, you're doing beautifully. It generally takes about 45 to 55 minutes. So trust, you know, cool. As you know, you can trust the process, but this is really rich and lovely. You're doing exactly as I hoped you might.
Wicked. So growing up, light-skinned, very light-skinned, mixed race. My father's black Jamaican, my mother's white Welsh. So growing up, my father was, you know, largely absent from my life. And that left, I think, a lot of questions for me unanswered about, like, why do I have this light skin? And what do I say when people are like, well, you're not really mixed race, are you? Because you're the same color as me. And they'd show their white arm to compare skin tones, you know? And obviously at the time, when I was younger, I didn't have that knowledge. Now I'm older, my knowledge is power. So I can learn and like counteract those kind of like silly comments where I'd be like, well, you know, there's different shades of black and there's different experiences of being mixed race. You know, genetics is an interesting thing. But I didn't have my father around. And I thought like a lot of my questions around identity and around race would come from my father. But he wasn't around. So I took a very destructive route into that absence. Be that, you know, getting into fights, getting in trouble with the police, running away from home. I was just very destructive as a teenager. And that all kind of came to a standstill when me and my mum had a big fight and an argument, and I attacked her and saw red. And then in her strength and in her courage, she rang the police. And I think, like, looking back, because at the time I really resented my mum for that, you know, like, because I was like, you're ruining my life, you know, I'm in trouble with the police now. But I look back now that I'm older, you know, and I can see like that was the greatest test of strength and resilience that you could ever show me, you know. And actions speak louder than words. Like, you never need to tell me that you love me. Your actions have shown that. And to find the courage and strength to be like, I'm going to do this because I'm out of options and I think this is going to be the best thing for him. I can never, like, I don't even know if I would ever have that courage, you know. So I always look at my mum and I think, like, your actions have shaped not only who you are, but who your children are. And now that I'm older, I can always look back to that and be.
And by the way, in researching you, I know that what's so lovely about you are a really profound, very present father figure role model to somebody else in your life. So you've managed to plug the gap of your father's absence. And also your blogs are really interesting. There's a series of, to let everybody know, I Am Enough. Yeah. And you talk about the impact of absent fathers, the impact of brothers, and then what I was just talking about there, the impact of father figures. Again, there's lots to talk about, and I'm sure you'll let
there's so much, you know, but you're completely right. So I think, like, there's two ways you can go, I think, on a path of, like, your father wasn't in your life for whatever reason, you know, and the older that I'm getting, the more I'm understanding that, and the more I can realize and I can understand why my father wasn't around and why he did the things that he's done. Doesn't mean that I, like, you know, condone that or I forgive that. It just means that I can understand and I can be like, okay, like, you're human, as opposed to you just being like this, like, nasty person who wasn't around, you know? So, but I was very blessed to have a father figure who, like, I shout out in my radio place with my next door neighbor, Julie. I've always called him my dad, you know? Like, anyone can be a father. It takes someone special to be a dad. And he was like a dad to me because he taught me how to shave. He would give me advice on, you know, girls when I was a puberty stripping teenager. And, you know, he would sit and listen. And if anything, he'd give me his time. And I think that is the most important thing that we have on this, like, on this earth, is time, because it's the one thing that you can't buy back. You can't replicate. You can't trade. You get, like, that's it. It just runs. So to give someone your time, like, wholeheartedly, is the greatest gift ever. So I'll always thank him for that. And he'll always be like my dad for that. But it means that he taught me then, you know, like, you know.
Who is that again? This is your neighbor's dad.
Yeah. So it's my next door neighbor. Like, Jody, his name is. But yeah, he was like, I'm godfather to his daughter. And you know, like, they're like a second family to me. So growing up, you know, like I say it in Hammond Drive is the opening poem for Domino's. But, like, within that, we were a community. We were a family. Like, there were no locked doors. We'd go in and out of each other's houses. And, you know, like, we'd go around for tea. Like, we were just like this little family on this estate. And that was us. And I think growing up with that, like, it takes a village to raise a child. And I had, like, a really good village that, like, if I was ever at a line, they would be the neighbors. But, like, you can't, what are you doing? You know, like, they would step up and they would be that black parental figure that would, like, you know, take me down to my mum's and be like, yo, Connor's acting up, you know? So I was very blessed, but it just means that I was able to, yeah, replicate that and see, you know, like, for Jace, who is my little man, he's the one that, yeah, I'm guess I'm a father figure or role model for. You know, I was able to do that in the same way that I was able to do that for Jody's daughter, you know, just being there and being present.
And your dad, if I may ask, is he still with us, but in the distance somewhere?
Yeah. He's out there somewhere. I think he still lives in Newport. I wouldn't particularly know. I mean, well, I haven't spoken to him. The last time we actually physically spoke was after I attacked my mum. And that was, I guess, the genesis of my whole kind of the work that I make, was because he took me out and like asked me why I did what I did. And I just said that, like, I want to live with you. I don't want to live with mum. Like, she doesn't understand me. And, like, I always remember, he was like, well, I don't want you to live with me. You're a monster. You, like, so I always, like, that really stuck, you know, for like a 16-year-old kid who idolizes his father, for him to kind of, like, say those words, you know, really destroyed me, I guess. So it took, like, you know, a good time of me going away to university and meeting people and understanding that I am loved and I'm not a monster. And, you know, because
it's hugely ironic that we can sometimes idolize somebody. I totally understand this, when they don't necessarily earn that right to be idolized.
100%.
There's something called attributed charisma, where we put people on a pedestal because of who they are, and then they don't necessarily measure up, and they ultimately are on a wobbly pedestal because of that.
Yeah, but then I look at it now, that's interesting you say that, because I'm like, what, like, he did nothing for me to put, but, like, when you're on that, I think the interesting thing about having an absent parent for me was he was a blank canvas. So I could paint this picture that I wanted to of him with, like, you know, a cape and a superhero and a crown. And he was the best. But with my mum, I had like a dusty Polaroid, which I couldn't change. And she was just there, but she was human. And now I look at it and I think, well, I've always got that Polaroid. Whereas this, like, canvas, I could just chuck black paint over, you know, because it's like, you're not, I painted Drake to be a god. But I understand I put that pressure on you then, because I was expecting you to be something that you're not. You're a human being, ultimately.
So, which makes you wiser for it, for that realization. Absolutely. This I is guess lovely so. Stuff. So we're still shaping the shapage within your tree.
Yeah, shaking. Apple number two, I guess, would be my best friend, Lloyd, passed away when I was 10 years old. And he had a brain tumor and he passed away when I was 10. And it was my first... it was my first interaction with grief. And I always remember coming home from school, and every child in St. Andrews had a brown envelope. And I brought it home. Now, so I was quite a cheeky, naughty kid. And I brought it home to my mum, and I sat her down, like, I came in, I gave it to her. I was like, I don't know what it is, but I've been good in school, so I don't know what it is, but everyone's got one. And my mum was like, I know what it is. And I was like, what? Like, how do you know this? Like, what witchcraft is this? Do you know? Like, you wouldn't be in school. And she told me to sit down. She never tells me to sit down. So I knew something was up. And I was like, what have I got to sit down for? Like, what? And she goes, Colin, just sit down. I was like, no. Like, what are you being weird for? What's going on? And then she told me. And she was like, well, like, Lloyd, you know, he's been ill. But like he passed away this morning. Like, he's gone. And that was, what, 20 years ago. Near enough. And to this day, two decades later, I can still remember viscerally that feeling that I had of this pit in my stomach just rising and rising, and I could feel it in my throat, and then my eyes just, and I couldn't, it's the only time that I couldn't control my emotions, because it was just such an experience of emotions, feeling my body. And I just said, you're lying. And I ran upstairs, and she chased me. And I ran into the box bedroom, and I just barricaded myself. I put my bed up against the door, and then I put the wardrobe against my bed, and I put the chest of drawers against the wardrobe and the wall. So there was like a barricade, so she couldn't get in. And I sat in that room for 2 days in my school uniform, and I just sat against the wall. And I just cried my eyes out for 2 days. I didn't come out, didn't go to the toilet, nothing. And my mum just sat on the landing and was just like knocking and like, you're okay. And I just sat there for 2 days. And I always say that, it's like I just sat there and just cried. And when I came out of that, I came out of the room then 2 days later. And I literally just, I still had the same school uniform on. And I just picked up my bag and I just went to school. And when his funeral happened, weeks later, I didn't cry. And I felt really bad, so I didn't cry. But I look back now and I think, but I cried all my tears, you know, like I was cried out. So for me, it was very much that, like, I didn't obviously know what grief was. And I think that is what sometimes you have to feel your emotions to understand what they are. I think, like, when we're younger, like, our emotions, ourselves, we're like a big ball of colorful string with all different colors. And we have to take these colors out of the ball to be like, oh, that's grief. That's interesting. I'm going to lay that down individually, you know, and then, oh, that's anger. I'm going to take that, you know. So the older we get, then we start having all these colorful strings that we can just be like, I understand these emotions now. Whereas when I was younger, obviously it was the first time that I understood grief. But I always feel now that I'm older, having experienced it so young makes me so acutely aware to like what people are going through, and I can just see it. And I don't know if that's a blessing or a curse, you know, but that would be my second apple, because I think without that, I wouldn't.
I love the presence of your mum, and the fact you said she knocked again gives even greater succor to the poem Knock Knock later on. So it's a lovely through line already.
100%. Man, didn't nothing. I just sat there in complete darkness for 2 days and just cried my eyes out. I was using like my best friend, like my brother. We did everything, you know, together. So like it's interesting now. I think that the older that I get sometimes, you know, reminiscing and looking back and you sometimes hit you, you know, like you think, wow, like we used to sit there, 9 years old, and we'd build, like, we had connects So like back in the day, you'd have like connects with these toys where like you would like, you know, put clip things together and you'd build all these like houses and we'd build worlds together, you know, fairgrounds and like houses, just complete worlds where our imaginations would go. And that was our dream that one day, you know, like we would live in this world that like, you know, we're just, they were so fun and freeing. And the fact that like he never got the chance to grow up and achieve that, you know, like it just, it stops me in my tracks sometimes, you know, because Yeah.
That's a profound second apple. Thank you. Apple number three, please. Occasionally, I've got a bell if we go, cashew number three, please. So this is
apple number. Apple number three. I think this is going to be a Granny Smith. You know, it's a good, juicy apple. It's a good apple. I think apple number three, I'm going to go with, when my mum, this was years later, so when my mum dropped me off to university, obviously I goes upstairs to my room and she drops me off. And bearing in mind now, obviously, I still had this suspended sentence hanging over me. You know, we weren't in the best place at all, you know. We had a court case and everything. And at the time, obviously, I didn't know because obviously I went upstairs. I was like, yeah, okay, cool, bye, whatever. And she went down to the car. And it was only years later that we kind of, we spoke about it. And it was so ironic that I closed the door and sat on my bed, empty room now, on my own, first time ever. And I just cried my eyes out for like 45 minutes. And my mum went downstairs, went all the way back to the car and sat in the car for 20 minutes and did the exact same. And we both just had that experience of us crying and just understanding that, I think, what are we going to do without each other? Which I think for me, now that I understand that, I was like, wow, you know, like I always used to think that my mum like didn't care and like, you know, didn't rate me as a son because of what I did. But she's there crying because I'm no longer going to be around and her eldest and her first like her first son is like, you know, going to be off doing whatnot. And she wrote me a card and I opened it and it said like, you know, to Connor, like, I'm so proud of you for where you, for like, for what you've done. And just remember that I'm on your phone call away and you're at university to learn, but also have fun and just be yourself. And yeah, like I think without the realization of that, you know, it's, because mum's always mum, isn't it? You know, from when we're born, mum's always been mum. Very understanding that like our parents have had lives before us, you know, like they were, you know, people before they were our parents. And I think that really showed me that like in some profound way that, wow, like she's gone through so much.
There's sort of obviously an innate constancy to your mum. She is ever present and a constant. It, through the highs, the lows, the highs, she's there.
Yeah, which it's bizarre because I think like for me, I was always a nanny's boy. So for me, I was always like, you know, yeah, nanny's boy. Whereas my little brother, he was always a mummy's boy. So it was always like they were super close and they are. But for me, it's like I get, yeah, it's a weird thing with me and my mum. If like I can go and travel the world and I could like, you know, message my mum and she'd be like, wait, like I do it now. I'm out. Like, you know, working, doing what I'm doing, to be like, I haven't heard from you in like 4 days. You like, nice to know you're alive. What are you doing? You know, it's that relationship that we got, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, it's been cultivated through so many years of us just trying to figure out what this is. And I always say like, there's no manual on how to be a parent. It's the biggest improvisation ever. And did my mum get it right all the time? Of course she did it. She's human. But I can look back now with more profound because, you know, I can have someone tell me that they love me a million times, but if you show me that you love me, and I think that's what my mum did, but I was just too young to appreciate that. Yeah. Her actions were that, you know, I said some horrible stuff to my mum, like growing up, which like I can't take back and I've got to live with, but she was there and she'd wipe her tears. And she'd get up the next morning and she'd have my school uniform there ready. She would, you know, like I'd go to school, she'd come home and we'd have like a freshly cooked meal on the table for me and my little brother. Like it's those acts that you think like, wow, you know, And I say it a lot, like, my energy and my charisma, a lot of people say that I get from my father. I'm very much like him, supposedly. And I question that a lot sometimes, because I'm like, well, he wasn't around. And I guess lately I've been really thinking, like, you know, what do I get from my mum? And I've always believed, especially now, that, like, my greatest gift is my capacity to love and show love and to give love. And that comes from my heart. And that's the greatest gift I got from my mum, you know. She gave me this heart because to empathy, you know, is allowing other people to walk in your shoes. And she has showed me that by being so empathetic to other people because of the stuff that she's overcome in her life, you know, and all those dominoes that have stacked up against my mum. And, you know, she gets knocked down 7 times, she gets back up 8. And it's that resilience that, you know, not just my mum, but like so many women in my life, my aunties, my nan, my neighbors, you know, my estate, like it's built on so much like resilient women that I guess I've always just been blessed to receive that love, even when I didn't even like understand it or know it. Mm.
Lovely. Fourth apple.
Fourth apple. I recently went to Jamaica for the first time. And I think that whole trip, I'll just put as one apple. So I think that's really shaped my understanding of who I am and where I'm at. And I went on a whole trip after, I went to the Civil Rights Museum in Atlanta, and I went to Martin Luther King tomb, and just being in Jamaica and seeing like that paradise, but then seeing the adverse poverty that is also there, you know, it was a real eye opener of understanding like my family tree and the reason why, you know, I guess my gran came over to Britain. And I think, yeah, profoundly that has had like a massive impact on my outlook in life. And Martin Luther King, yes. He had
Windrush generation related, or
so my nan, my gran would be first generation Windrush. So like she came over and settled with my granddad, and then so then my, I guess my father, my aunts, my uncles, they're second generation. I find it weird because I technically I'd be third generation, but I was born in the UK. So I don't, you know, yeah, it's a weird, some people would say, well, you're still a descendant of Windrush generation. So I don't know. I'm always like, I don't really look that deep into that. But for my gran, then yeah, like she's first generation Windrush. So. Yeah.
If I may, in researching you as well, something really struck me as well, that on the night when you were being sort of brought back from the police station, just going back, even though you were your nan's boy, it was your granddad that turned up to get you.
I wrote that in my autobiographical show, The Making of a Monster. I there's a moment in there where like my the character of Connor had like a comment. There's like a his nan's voice brings him out of this nightmare, and she's relaying the story that like my nan actually told me. But yeah, it was like, I've always been a nanny's boy, and that was the first time ever. Like my nan was like kind of like the head of the table, you know, like she was like, oh, well, what she says goes, and she holds everything down. And my granddad was like this devoted husband who would just sit there and he'd just support her, you know? And it was the first time that he'd ever been like, no, Janet, I'm going to get him. Because for the first time ever, he needs a man in his life. And he drove to a police station and picked me up, and we sat in the car. And bearing in mind, what was that now? 15 years. He's got to be, you know, 70 possibly at the time, you know. I'm some angry, volatile teenager. And he literally just sat, I got in the car, he looked across at me and he just said, I'm going to say this one time and one time only. If you ever lay a finger on my daughter again, then you'll have me to deal with. And he just fixed his wind mirror, started the car and drove off. And at the time I was like, whatever, old man. Whereas now that I'm older, I can respect that so much, because I was like, you, this volatile grandson of yours is just, he's off, like, you know, he's out there, you know, like, yeah, like attacking your daughter and getting in trouble with the police, and these like many people were deemed off the rails, but you confronted that knowing full well he could do anything, and you chose to be like, no, you don't lay a finger on my daughter. So I think, like, again, actions speak louder than words, and your actions at that time, I can now look back and be like, you're one of the bravest men that I know. So shout out to my granddad as well.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world, and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So now we're on to three things that inspire you, Connor Allen. So,
three things that inspire me. So I think I'm going to put, I'm going to cheat. I'm going to put the young people in my life as one apple, and that goes for little man Jake's, because he inspires me to be a better version of myself, so I can inspire him to grow up and be better.
How old is little man Jace now?
Little man Jace now is, I should know this, shouldn't I? He's 13. yeah, he's 13. He just started, 12, sorry. He just started high school. I'm questioning that now. Is he 12 or 13? He's 12.
You can ask him later.
Yeah, do you get me? I'll be like, how old are you, mate? It's just understanding that, like, I want to put young people in general, inspire me, but Paulo Coelho puts it best when he's like, if you ever want to look at the world without bitterness, look at it through a child's eyes. And I always hold on to that quote, because I just think, do you know what, there's something really beautiful about looking at the world through a child's eyes. And I had the greatest privilege by being children's laureate of having 2 years of being able to look at the world through the children of Wales's eyes, and from that I'm a better person for that, because they've showed me so much empathy, so much love, so much hope, so much intelligence for the next generation. So I put the next generation of young people in one apple, but I have to shout out, like, you know, little man Jace, because I wake up and want to be, you know, a better person, a better version of me because of that. And within that, I'll put my best friend's little girl, Evelyn. I put her in there as well, because she's only five, but her just her in general, and again, her capacity to love and feel. Like, I gave her a hug the other night, and she said to my friend, she was like, "Mummy, Uncle Connor gives the best hugs, because when I hug him, I can feel his heartbeat." Oof. And it's just, to get me, and it's like, you're 5 years old, mate. Like, what? And it's those moments that
you're definitely big hearted. I get that. That's really singing through what you're talking
about. Yeah. You know, so it's like, when I got that, I'm like, well, how can I not? And I know I put that pressure on myself, but I think it's that, like, being a role model to them and trying to make them understand that, like, you know, the world is such a big place, but it's also so small, and you can be.
You're also a testament for coming from a place of, you know, initial darkness, but into light now. There is that, again, I keep being really struck with the threshold of the door. I know Knock Knock is coming. It's a good
point. No, honestly, I've just got this obsession with doors. I honestly don't know where it comes from, but
I'm right there. I'm loving it I keep putting it off. Maybe we should do the door now, but I'll put it on a plinth in a minute. Okay, you're crunching through your inspirational apples. Where are you up to now?
Inspirational apples. Apple number two, my little brother, Blade, yeah, is like the biggest. I probably should have put him first, actually. But he's the biggest inspiration for me. Just understanding, like, our experiences and how, like, we have each other. I think, like, he is, without a doubt, my best friend, my confidant, my brother. Just trying to create a life that, you know, I can look after him and mum, you know. Something interesting was said to me recently, that it was, I read, like, if you heal yourself, you heal those around you. And it really struck me, and I thought, like, my brother's similar to me, you know, like, he's got his own demons in his past, but, you know, by me delving into those kind of, I guess, those depths, it means that it opens up and gives him the space to hopefully, you know, have those conversations and heal himself, you know. So I'll always put my brother up there in everything that I do, because it just means that I'm able to provide, you know, like, better things for him that we didn't have when we were growing up. I'm able to show him a better life that, like, through no fault of my mum, you know, like, but we had a great life. But, you know, it's nice that, like, I'm in a position where I'm able to be like, do you know what? Like, let's go out for food. But it's on me, and I'll pick, you know, like, it's just like, it's little random acts of kindness. I feel like, you know, when we were growing up, we didn't have that luxury, you know. I always remember walking over to the cinema, because obviously, like, mum didn't drive back then. So we'd walk, like, you know, 35 minutes over to the cinema, and then she'd stop off at Tesco, you know, because she couldn't afford to, like, you know, like, get all the snacks in the cinema. So then she'd buy, like, you know, a bag of popcorn, maybe one bottle of drink that we could share, and then add three for a pound on, like, the Tesco sweets. Then she'd stick them in a handbag because she was embarrassed, you know. And it was those things, I think, like, actually, that's taught us to hustle, you know. Like, I'm poor, you get me? I'm like, I get older now, and I think, like, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. But I'm like, you taught us to hustle. And, like, you raised two mixed race kids on a Newport Council estate, you know, and they both went to university, they both got degrees, they both, like, they beat the system because of you. Because statistically in the UK, there's more black and mixed race boys in prison than there are in university. And I was like, I was so close to becoming that statistic. But, like, you know, through your determination, through your tenacity, you didn't give up on me or Blade, you know, my little brother. So, like, he's always an inspiration to me, because I'm like, mum sacrificed so much, and it means that I'm taking that and I'm making sure that you're the best version that you can be. And that's a lot of pressure, and I know that I can't put that pressure on him. I'm like, Blade, just be Blade, you know, like, you are who you are, and I can support that. But I can't lie if I'm saying that, like, you know, just having him in my life isn't, like, the biggest inspiration, because he's my little brother. And, you know, if I can't be a role model, then who can?
So now we're going to stay in the clearing, move away from the tree. The plinth with your poetry book is coming up, but let's talk about alchemy and gold next. I've even got bar, no extra charge.
Look at that, mate, come on.
Get
it. I thought that was real. And I was like, hey, what's that? Like,
looks real, doesn't it? So, When you're at purpose and in flow, it's sort of implicit in the fact that you've been Children's Laureate for Wales. But when you're at purpose and in flow, what are you absolutely happiest doing, Connor?
Spending time with loved ones, I think, for me is like, and that's not to disregard like my art and my craft, like I love that, but I think a lot of my art comes from authenticity, and I don't get to top up my cup without spending time with loved ones, because time is the most important gift. So being able to gift my time, really makes me happy.
And there is that extraordinary dichotomy of the fact your dad never gifted you the gift of time, and that's his loss, it would seem, obviously, because now you've learned so profoundly in surrounding your own sense of belonging is about spending time with those, as you just said, that are precious to you.
100%. That's a beautiful way of looking at it.
So now let's put your wonderful poem Knock Knock on a plinth. What's the book it's part of? It's not Dominoes. I thought it was, but you said it
no wasn't. It is there, another yellow door for you, Chris, right there. Miracle.
Love that.
It's a children's collection of a lot. Well, chapter, it's three chapters, but chapter one is all like my kind of Laureate commission poems, and then we've got chapter two, which is the I Am poems, which is an exercise that I did during my tenure where I get like children to create their own poems under the guise of I Am. So I would prove to them that they're all miracles and they all got their own doors, different shapes, different sizes. But behind that door is you. What makes you you? So we'd make a list poem, a little exercise where they'd write down their favorite season, their favorite place, their favorite smell, their favorite toy, and their favorite person. Then they'd write like in one word or one sentence why those things are their favorite. And then in the first column, they'd write, I am. And then they end up having just like a 5-line I am poem where they'd be like, I am summer, hot weather. I am Newport home. I am Lacoste red, first girlfriend. I am super dog, beloved toy. I am little brother, best friend. And then you've got like a poem then about you, you know, but then every single one is different and it empowers them. And what I was able to do, because I thought, well, what is my legacy, you know, and what, how can I empower the next generation? Well, actually what I can do, I can publish them in a book so they can go into Waterstones, they can go into W.H. Smith with their parents, but I'm in that book. What? Yeah. Gloria, Liam, Emily, like you're in that book. That's yours, you know, for forever. And you're legacized. For forever. And then chapter three is just new poems that I've written for this. Yeah, it's just three chapters of miracles and poems. So yeah.
So with your permission, would you like to do Knock Knock? And tell us if you'd like anything you'd like to do to position it, but then over to you too.
Ah, let's go. Knock knock. And I always get who's there. And I'm like, I wonder why I get that, you know? Interesting. Knock, knock. I wonder what's behind this door. See, I hope it's not remnants of a time before. And these times that move so fast, yet there's fragments of my past that are rooted in pain. And there's histories of shame when I travel down memory lane. But imagine, if behind this door, there's potential, not purpose, because that's what's essential. Because each and every one of us, we all have this magic contained within us. To hope and dream of a better future is a must. So turn the handle, unlock the door, travel through. Just look upon all those different variations of you. Because there's strength, there's dreams, there's creativity and so much more. And it's waiting for each and every one of you behind that door.
And on that wonderful note of the sublime poem Knock Knock by Connor Allen, sadly that brings us to the end of time on today's episode of UK Health Radio. If you'd like to listen to the full length episode straight away, then go to the Good Listening 2 show Stories of Distinction and Genius on Buzzsprout, where the podcast proper is hosted. The full length version will also be on the UK Health Radio podcast version as well. But we're out of time, as I say, for today. Thanks so much to Connor Allen, National Welsh Children's Poet Laureate 2021 to 2023. And in the full length version, there are also three extra poems from Connor Allen too. So until next week, when there'll be more stories from the clearing, to your good health, I've been Chris Grimes. That was Connor Allen, and goodbye. You've been listening to the Good Listening To show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, from me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
And goodbye.